Pop Spotting 205.
Friday, February 3rd, 2012.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Feedback Friday, and as promised, we've got some of your thoughts on books, plus some movie talk, which goes well with a few reports of interesting theaters out there.
Finally, we'll have a flashback via music feedback, but yes, let's start with the book talk.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, it's Jeff in Texas, Texas Jeff W on Twitter. Hey, I just wanted to call you. I mentioned this on Twitter, I think, and also mentioned it on the Facebook page, but I just wanted to thank you all again for recommending the book Ready Player One. I read that. Actually, I got a Kindle Touch for Christmas, and one of the first books I bought was Ready Player One, and read that thing in about a day and a half, I think. That book was amazing. As somebody who graduated from high school in the mid-'80s, all the references were awesome, and it was just a fun book to read. It's all the references were great. So I was glad to read that one, and I wouldn't have even heard about it except for y'all talking about it on one of the episodes. So just thanks for mentioning that. I'm looking forward to hearing what other books and movies and music y'all are talking about, and just enjoy listening to the show. Hope y'all have a good show. Talk to y'all later. Bye.
Thanks for your call, Jeff. Ready Player One is a really great read, one of my favorites from last year, and it's definitely united a lot of people. I wanted to say thanks to Daniel in Boston for being the first to review it on our show.
That was back in September, and a lot of other people got to Ready Player One as well. Megan W. on Facebook wrote, I finished Ready Player One the other day, really enjoyed it, totally sucked me in, ran out to the library to pick it up for my hubby, since I'm not loaning him my new Kindle to read it.
April in Ohio writes, I read it a month ago. I had to stop for a minute and think about some of the references because I had forgotten them, but I loved it.
Bonita in Atlanta writes, finished Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. Will Wheaton did an excellent job of narrating the audiobook, which I borrowed from my public library. Thanks so much to Pop Spotting for the recommendation. I'm seeking other great audiobook recommendations. Also, finished The Hunger Games. Thanks for that recommendation. My teen and I are both enjoying it. Reminds me a bit of The Handmaid's Tale. And some of the other dystopian novels by the amazing Margaret Atwood.
I really love the Hunger Games trilogy, but our daughter, even more so, she's rereading them again for the second time, and she's so into the fandom, she's buying t-shirts, and she's even got a companion book.
Yeah, that's what she's been reading in church lately, much to our chagrin. Of course, I'm not setting the best example, reading my email and tweeting in church, but nonetheless, we also have some more thoughts on the Hunger Games.
Barry in Wisconsin writes, I've recently gotten into the Hunger Games trilogy. I got through the first book in 3 days, and I just finished Catching Fire in 2 days and will be starting Mockingjay soon. I haven't been this engrossed in a book since reading the last Harry Potter. They're incredible books, and I can't believe I was actually getting anxious when the game started. How about a show sometime, possibly closer to the release of the movie on March 23rd, going over all of the books and previewing the movie? I think it would be fun to devote a show to this.
Well, that's a great idea. I think we probably will do that. And, you know, Katie's got her countdown to the Hunger Games movie. You've been watching the trailers. I think some of the music is coming out. Mm-hmm. It's definitely building momentum. I'm not sure if we're going to do a things we're looking forward to in 2012, but I know the Hunger Games would be very much on the short list.
Absolutely, for me. I also wanted to mention that the Civil War is the music pick that our friend Jeff gave us has produced the music for The Hunger Games, and they wrote a song for Taylor Swift that she performs in the film that I like a lot.
Yeah, Katie's been having that on high rotation, so absolutely you can look for more Hunger Games talk, and I guess if you haven't read the books, you might want to dive in for that conversation. Let's get another book recommendation from the very person who brought us Ready Player One.
Hello, Ryan and Jen, or actually really this message is just, hello, Jen. I know Ryan's not reading anything anymore, so I'm actually leaving this message for you. This is Daniel Phenomenal book. I know Jen, you have a large pile on your nightstand, and at the risk of tipping it over, I need to recommend The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern. It's a 2001 release, and I'm not going to do it justice at all in the way I'm about to describe it, but sort of picture an evening circus, a circus that takes place only at night. It's a magical circus. This is a novel that's absolutely magical realism. Takes place turn of the century, 1800s to 1900s, around the world. And it's sort of a contest between a male and a female protege, two proteges of two real magicians. But the context is also not intentionally a love story. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece and had me, you know, really thinking about Cirque du Soleil and sort of the magic of the circus. Enjoy, if you get a chance to read it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. I think it'd be a great recommendation for people. And look forward to hearing more from you all. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for your call, Daniel. Another book recommendation. Jen, do you know anything about The Night Circus?
I had never heard of it, but I'm telling you, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page with the cover art, and I think I am really interested in it.
Just from the picture on the cover?
Yes.
This hand and a bunch of circus tents?
Yes.
You judge books by their cover.
All the time.
All right. Well, you know, it does sound interesting. Apparently, when it's promoted, they throw in mentions of Harry Potter or Twilight, but also Neil Gaiman and Something Wicked This Way Comes, a movie that still kind of makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Actually, when I was hearing his description just then, that's exactly what I thought of.
Okay, well, it sounds like a pretty good prospect to make it onto your to-do reading list, but I'm afraid there's another book recommendation from another great friend of ours.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, this is Jeff Gentry, X-Force 11, calling in with a book recommendation. I know Jen is behind on her Stephen King selections, but I'm just going to add another to it. The title of the book is Duma Key. It came out a couple years ago, and I tried reading it at first and just couldn't get into it. I came back to it a little later as in audiobook form and just really enjoyed it. It's set in Florida, so it's kind of a departure from a lot of his books set in Maine, set in the Keys, and it deals with a construction guy who has suffered an accident and has taken up art to help. And he's come to this island and things just start to blossom and move forward. It's got a neat cast of characters in the whole story that really draw you in, and they're just really colorful. I really enjoyed the audiobook. The audiobook is performed by John Slattery from Mad Men, and it's just, he does a really good job, and he puts life into those characters. He really makes it come alive. He's a very good voice actor. I've listened to some other Stephen King books, and I really like the way he does stuff. He does women and men very well, and he just brings those characters to life. It's a neat twist on stories of dealing with history and the supernatural and just the power of art, and it's just really neat. It's one that you should check out, and I highly recommend it in audiobook form because of John Slattery's performance. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Hey, Jeff. Always good to hear from you. Actually, Duma Key is one of the only latter Stephen King books that I've read, and I enjoyed it a lot because I thought it was a real departure for him, not just in terms of setting, but I thought his style was different, and I thought he was doing something really unique with Duma Key.
Well, he says it's set in the Keys. Did it ring any true to you as a former resident of Florida?
Well, Duma Key is not a real place.
Well, okay, so but he wasn't really trying to invoke the South specifically?
He did. Actually, he did. I really felt like I was on one of the Keys.
Well, there you go, I guess. At least for one Floridian, it didn't ring false at the very least. And like you said, this is one of his newer books, so you're not completely that far behind on his stuff.
This was the first book he wrote after his accident, and his character in the book also suffers a similar accident. So in a way, I think this really was Stephen King trying to come to terms with his accident and dealing with it afterward.
And as Jeff mentioned, he experienced this book as an audiobook, and Bonita was looking for an audiobook recommendation, so this might be the perfect match.
I believe so, and I think John Slattery has a really great speaking voice. So this is an audiobook I'm actually very curious about.
Yeah, and you know, I admit, I don't actually listen to any audiobooks. We had Audible as a sponsor. They have a very big library. So with the transmission, that was when I tried, I think, John Hodgman's books. And when the author reads it, it's definitely cool. But I can see how you can become attached to a specific reader or a specific voice. And Bonita mentioned she got it from her library. Have you tried that too?
I haven't. Our local library doesn't seem to have that big of a selection of audiobooks. And I am really into reading a physical book. There's something about hearing the author's voice while I turn the pages that is really a big draw for me when I read.
Well, what if the author is reading the book, though?
Yeah, well, that would be interesting. Like Sarah Vowell, she reads her own books also, but she also has guest readers, which is something I'm curious about. I do want to hear Assassination Vacation in audio.
So I guess we're taking both book reading recommendations and audiobook recommendations here on Pop Spotting. But let's shift the subject over to movies.
Cheryl on Facebook writes, "Fun to hear your take on Midnight in Paris. This movie is delightful and somewhat insightful, but still nowhere near the brilliance of Annie Hall, Manhattan, and Hannah and Her Sisters. The Sheen character, Paul, is typical for a Woody Allen movie, where exposure of clueless pretentiousness is consistent."
Well, that's certainly something that Woody Allen is known for, which is funny because of how you might perceive Woody Allen himself. But certainly that character, Paul, from Midnight in Paris, is familiar in terms of the archetype. And as you mentioned, you know, Woody Allen does have this ability or tendency to mock his own Americanness and Americans in general.
Right.
Well, Jimmy in Georgia writes on Facebook, "After listening to your show, I plan to watch Midnight in Paris. I'm not really a Woody Allen fan, but after your discussion, the movie now sounds interesting."
I am by no means a Woody Allen fan. I think I mentioned that I really enjoyed Vicky Cristina Barcelona, but I am curious enough now to go back and watch some of his older movies.
You've seen Annie Hall, though.
I saw it a really long time ago, and honestly, all I remember about it is the lobsters.
Okay, well, you know, Cheryl mentions it as a favorite movie. I loved it, too. I think it's worth revisiting because I also have maybe preconceived notions about Woody Allen and his films. And it's interesting that you mentioned Vicky Cristina Barcelona. That's also one of his more recent movies.
Right.
But that plus Midnight in Paris does, I think, at the very least, open the door for us to give him another chance.
Nancy in New York writes, "I was listening with bated breath. It would have sucked if you'd hated it. Glad you liked it. I think it was his best in 25 years.
Well, that's certainly high praise. Cheryl wasn't quite as confident in how great it was, but we really, really enjoyed it. And even Matt Marici, you know, the lost tour guide turned Expedia adventurer, was very happy that we covered this. And he was one of the many people that talked us into checking out the film. But we go from Woody Allen to, well, less heady fare with Mission Impossible.
Susan in Texas writes, "Here in Houston, Alamo Drafthouse had a free movie day today, so I saw this film because it wasn't one that I would have paid to see on the big screen. I enjoyed it a lot more than I was expecting to. Tom Cruise was not very annoying. Jeremy Renner and Simon Pegg were great. Of course, Michael Giacchino's score jumped out at me in that first scene, especially after recognizing the actor on screen. I give it 3 out of 5 broken skyscraper windows."
Well, that's a pretty good review. Alamo Drafthouse is almost worth seeing any movie. I really wish we had something like that here, and we'll talk a little bit more about cool movie theaters in a bit. And certainly that skyscraper scene was probably worth the price of admission, and I will agree that at least in this film, Tom Cruise was not annoying. Dave, or the inter Dave, wrote on the blog, "Hey guys, great discussion on Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Ryan, you were saying that Paula Patton reminded you of a bunch of other actresses. The first time I saw the trailer, I thought it was Zoe Saldana."
That's
another comparison. "Overall, I thought your analysis was great, and even though it wasn't a perfect movie, it was a very fun romp with amazing visuals and a great first outing for Brad Bird as a live-action director. Keep up the great work." Yes, Zoe Saldana, probably who I might have had in mind. A great comparison there. And yes, a perfectly serviceable action film, and I want to see more out of Brad Bird after The Iron Giant and The Incredibles. I think that guy does fantastic stuff on the big screen. And very quickly, we heard from Jeffrey, or MacFreak815 on Twitter, who wrote, "Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol was so good that we went back to see it in IMAX. And again, there are some scenes where I could probably really want to pay that extra money to be immersed in that experience."
Yeah, I think I would like it better in IMAX.
Okay, well, as I mentioned, we had more thoughts on cool theaters. Let's start with Holly in Pennsylvania on Facebook, who wrote, "I was listening to your Feedback Friday episode, and someone talked about a 19-plus theater. What she was describing was something that we have here called Movie Tavern. It's somewhat of a growing franchise. It seems like from the website, there's quite a few in Texas, but I go to the one in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. There's so many great things about Movie Tavern. You don't have to fill up on just popcorn and candy when you go to the movies. Their menu is full of different choices, from salads to pizzas. The prices are very reasonable. They bring your meal right to your seat, and the servers are very courteous as to not disrupt the viewing of the movie. The seats are very comfortable and plenty of leg room to to allow the servers to move about without distraction. You don't even have to order anything if you don't want. You can just enjoy the movie. But if you want dinner and even alcoholic drinks, they'll bring it right to you. It's awesome. A couple of other great features is that they offer breakfast on the weekends at the 9 a.m. show, and they present retro nights every night, from movies from the 80s to movies from the 40s. Recently, at the holidays, they showed such classics as A Christmas Story, White Christmas, and It's a Wonderful Life. Check out the website when you get a chance at movietavern.com.
We need one of these.
Yeah, if it's a franchise, we should probably try to get a loan and open one of these things here, because whether it's the A La Moana Draft House or a movie tavern, this has to come to Honolulu.
Scott in San Francisco writes, you were asking about new style theaters. Robert Redford has started buying theaters and rebranding them as Sundance Cinemas. I have one a few blocks from my house. You pay a couple extra dollars for reserved seats. It seems to keep out the teenagers and their cell phones. Some of the theaters have bars in them also. I'm a fan of Sundance Cinemas, as I would be.
Yeah, that sounds great. Steph Smith in Alabama writes on Twitter, our theater here has a bar upstairs for over 21 with comfy seating, and downstairs is regular price and seats. But whether it's adults only or, you know, food or alcoholic drinks, I definitely can go for the idea of making the movie-going experience kind of special and not relying on gimmicks like 3D, which mostly just gives me a headache.
Yeah, give me a classic movie and a beer any old day of the week, and let me spend extra money the way I want to and not on silly glasses.
Well, you know, I like the idea because going out to movies has now reached the same price point as other special events, like maybe the opera or the theater, you know, stage plays and stuff. So why not completely dress it up? There are some ideas here in Honolulu that are kind of picking up. We mentioned the Hanaho Picture Show. They use the biggest theater with reserved seating where you can see old movies. In fact, the one you want to go to next week
is Princess Bride.
That'll be kind of awesome. We do have a movie museum, but right now Honolulu is behind the times, and we do hope that you'll continue to send in what's going on in your neighborhood to make movies more interesting. Let's move on to music.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Faith from Nashville, FBMC on Twitter. I am wrapping up my two-day pop spotting marathon and just listened to Wednesday's show on the best songs of 1992. I was only 13 in 92, but it was the first year I really started appreciating the music that I still actually listen to today. So here's my list. Number 5, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Under the Bridge. Love that song. Love it every time I hear it. Number 4, Guns N' Roses, November Rain. I went as far as to buy the sheet music and learned it on the piano and still play it every once in a while. I think it has a beautiful melody and I love listening to it. Number 3 is Happy Workers by Tori Amos from the Toys soundtrack. Really fun movie if you haven't seen it, with a wonderful soundtrack. I played this song over and over again on my CD player. It probably got more play than any of Tori Amos's other songs from her albums. Number 2 is Who Is It by Michael Jackson, one of my top 5 Michael Jackson songs of all time. And number 1 holds a very dear place in my heart. 1989 was the year I discovered REM, but 1992 was the year I fell in love with them. Automatic for the People is my favorite album of all time, definitely my favorite REM album. And Drive is the best song on the album and my favorite REM song. 1992 was such a great year for music. It seriously was a long, long list before I got to 5. So I have 3 honorable mentions as well. Layla from Eric Clapton's Unplugged album. I love the original Layla, but the Unplugged one I listen to probably more. Even Flow from Pearl Jam's 10. That whole album is great. Even Flow is one of the best songs on the album. And a little band called The Party, who came out of the new Mickey Mouse Club. I was a little obsessed when I was young, so I listened to that album a lot. And the title track, Free, is one of my favorite songs. So Layla, Even Flow, and Free are on my honorable mentions list. So that's my list. Love you guys. Love the show. Thanks for keeping me entertained and introducing me to all kinds of entertainment. Bye.
Thanks for your call, Faith. It is so good to hear your voice.
I would have picked something from 10 by Pearl Jam. That is one of my all-time favorite albums, except I read that it actually came out in 91, so I had to eliminate it. You mentioned November Rain. I like that song a lot. And that's one of my favorite music videos ever, actually.
With the tragic wedding.
Right.
I like it, too. Well, we've got more thoughts. Laura, or Laura HD. On Twitter, wrote, really enjoyed your podcast with music from 1992. Great picks, and the music brought back good memories. Thanks.
MacFreak815 writes on Twitter, I was born in 1992. Ooh. I guess I'll have to start listening to some music from that era. Love the podcast.
Yeah, way to make us feel older,
Get
Jeffrey.
Get off my lawn!
David Cole, or Batch Out on Twitter, wrote, aloha, my top music albums of 1992 are Peter Gabriel's Us, 10,000 Maniacs with Our Time in Eden, 99.9 Degrees by Suzanne Vega, and Going Blind Again by Ride.
And finally, Nancy in New York writes on Facebook, love They Might Be Giants. As a Gemini, I would have to pick My Evil Twin off Apollo 18.
Excellent pick. I like everything on Apollo 18, especially those little 10-second songs, but we really love music recommendations, your feedback and suggestions on artists and albums. We want to do another music show, but it's going to come down to you helping us pick a theme. Sure, we could pick another year, but have you got a cool idea, like songs about food? Trust me, we almost did that one. Your participation in the Pop Spotting community is vital to the ongoing health of the show, for the survival of Feedback Friday. So whether it's music or books or apps or anything else, we absolutely positively love hearing from you.
You can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808. You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net, or you can comment on the blog at popspotting.net.
You can also post your thoughts on the Pop Spotting page on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting, and you can also connect with us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
If you like podcasts as much as we do, we know sometimes it's hard to keep up with them all, and syncing your phone can be a royal pain. Fortunately, there's Stitcher Smart Radio. It's a free app for iPhone, Android, and other smartphones that lets you easily stream the latest episode of your favorite podcast, and we hope that includes Pop Spotting.
We absolutely do, and we have a special landing page at Stitcher at stitcher.com/popspotting, and if you use that link to try the app, or if you send that link to your friends, it does support the show, but really your feedback is our favorite fuel, and the fact that you're listening means quite a bit to us. We will be back soon with more Pop Talk. For now, we want to thank Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song.
And thank you guys for listening to our show. For Pop Spotting, I am Jen.
And I am Ryan.
Aloha.
Aloha. Ha.